You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Taking the bull by the horns figuratively means facing a daunting challenge directly and confidently. But in Portuguese culture, that saying is quite literal. While bullfighting is illegal in California, bloodless bullfighting has been legal in the state since the 1950s, a Portuguese spectacle between men and bulls where the animals are not physically harmed. The bullfights have been part of religious festivals in the state, but this month made their debut at the Stanislaw County Fair. We're going to learn more about its cultural significance as well as the history of the Portuguese in the Central Valley. Joining us now from the Turlock Pentecost Association is Clarence Oliveira, who organized the event at the Stanislaw County Fair, and Tony Machado, who has nearly 30 years of Portuguese bullfighting experience. Clarence and Tony, welcome to Insight. Good morning.
How you doing?
Clarence, starting with you, your organization is the Turlock Pentecost Association, and you organized this debut at the California State Fair. Can you tell us more about the association and who you all are?
Well, our association started back in 1912, so we've been around for over 100 years, and we are a Portuguese Catholic organization that started back in the Azores Islands. A lot of our immigrants migrated to California in the late 1800s, and in the early 1900s throughout the Central Valley, created organizations in different cities to celebrate the Holy Ghost, the Holy Spirit.
Why is bloodless bullfighting important to your group and your culture in the Central Valley?
Well, it's part of our tradition back to the islands. Most islands back in the Azores have a celebration that involves bullfighting through their celebration weekend, which starts after Easter week, or Easter Day, I should say. That is kind of the part of the entertainment that is given to the public after the feast of feeding the participants and also the poor. That is tradition of the culture that leads all the way back to Queen Elizabeth, that was the Queen of Portugal.
How was the county fair? It just wrapped up. What went into having this debut in Stanislaw County?
Well, it's been more than just this year. This kind of started back with Matt Cranfield, the CEO of Stanislaw's Fair, back in 2019. I was the president back in 2019, and that was something that we started discussion and how we can do something at the fair where we can have multiple entertainers in one arena with multiple audience viewing who we are and what we do. Mm.
Tony, I want to bring you in because you are across the Atlantic. You're actually speaking to us from the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, the island of Terceira, which is part of the Azores, which is located roughly 1,000 miles off the coast of Portugal. And I know we're getting some feedback with your Zoom, but can you just start off by describing where you're at? I think you're one of the most unique guests, physically speaking, that we've had on Insight, joining us in the middle of the ocean.
I got here, it was 8:30 this morning in Terceira. I'm actually at an uncle's house right now. Here to watch a anniversary bullfight of a group that was participated this year in Turlock Festa, and they've been to Turlock Pentecost and California for other bullfights. It's their 15th year anniversary, so I'm here to support them and be here to watch the show.
You have been involved in bullfighting, Portuguese bullfighting, for nearly 30 years. What inspired you to get in the ring?
As a kid, I was around bullfighting from the age of 5-6 years old. I've been around those animals. I learned how to ride horses up there, work on those animals. I work those animals in corrals. I've been around them for many, many years. I started grabbing bulls for the Suicide Squad, which terminology in California, that's what we'd call them, but the right way to call them would be fricados. I started when I was 17 and I retired, I was 46.
And you mentioned that you're at your uncle's house. If you can just kind of talk to us more about your connection to the Azores.
My parents both are born and bred here in Terceira. Neighbors, probably maybe anywhere from 6 to 10 houses apart from one another. I've been here many times. I've been to the mainland, and it's like home. I feel comfortable here. I have a lot of friends here, some family, but over the years we've with bullfighting and just mutual friends between me and my family, we know a lot of people here on the island.
What is the cultural significance of these bullfights, given that you've obviously been a part of this for decades, but you have such deep roots to Portuguese culture?
It's a way of entertainment, okay? Like, I'm going to compare it what we do in Turlock. The Festa week starts on Tuesday with praying the rosary. You pray Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. On Sunday, you go to Mass. On Friday, you have, you know, an entertainment show, whatever it may be. On Saturday, the same thing. On Sunday, you might have just a dance, just a lowercase, you know, type of entertainment. Then you got the bullfight, which you usually entertain anywhere from 3,000 to about 5,000 people. It's an opportunity to entertain the public, to entertain the people that have helped you support this, you know, the organization. And it's a little bit given back to the community as an entertainment type of deal. Mm.
What brought you to the Central Valley in California?
Well, I was born and bred. My parents moved here, moved to the States in 72. I was born in 73. Just been a part of it. My parents have always been tied to Turlock Pentecost, not so much as a president or anything like that, but always part of the background scene on the helping. Just something I got into it in the last, on the bullfight part, I've always supported Turlock. And then about 2012, Bobby Estacia had brought me in as a director, got me involved. Pretty much everybody that I know and I've known for a long time, I've been involved there at Turlock. They got me wrapped into it. And then in 2021, they invited me to take over as vice president for the president and his wife that was at that time, which was Nelson Fonts and Julia. And we went to, you know, we went ahead and did our year. It was very successful. A lot of support from the community, from our families, our friends, our organization. So it was a good experience. It was something that I don't regret what I did on making that decision, because I did it at a time that I could still enjoy it. Mm-hmm.
You know, although these fights are marketed as bloodless and the state has banned bullfighting back in the 1950s, but bloodless bullfighting is still legal in California, which is why it's ongoing. Obviously, some animal rights groups in California and nationally have criticized this tradition. I mean, most notably PETA, saying both the bulls and the horses that are used are tormented and nothing more than objects. What is your response to those sentiments?
Number one, when we don't know too much about a certain thing, we should ask questions and educate ourselves a little bit. Because in every aspect of other people do and what we do, there is a reason, there's an explanation. These animals that are speaking on the bulls, these animals are born and bred to bullfight. Okay. They are bone, or they are bred and fought to see their nobility, how good they are, their aggression, how true the bull is to what we want to see. And for the bull owners, they take the very best and continue the breeding to make it even that much better. On the horse's part, these animals are different bloodlines. You got Lusitanos, you got Arabians, you got quarter horses that do bullfight, more Lusitanos. These horses are very well taken care of. If I had video, I would show you. These animals, they go to the gym, you know, basically they get a workout. They're unsaddled, they're washed, they're taken care of. They're the athletes. They're not mistreated. They're not abused. They're like when these owners that own these horses, they treat them as they're not a tool. They become, it's more than even a pet. They become part of a team, a part of I don't know, like a brother. I mean, not a brotherhood, but I mean, those animals are very well taken care of. I mean, any little thing, any little scratch, anything, these animals are right away, right on top of them. The vet's out there checking them. If you had the opportunity to see it with your own eyes, you'd be like, wow, these guys really don't screw around with this. They really take care of these animals. It's really interesting to see how well these animals are taken care of, even with the bulls, because these bulls are in a habitat that nobody's messing with them. They have shade, they have fresh water, they're fed, they're maintained. If something comes up wrong with them, they're brought in, taken care of. If you would actually see some of the situations, that you would be like, there is no abuse. There is no really, there's just no abuse. They're very well taken care of. And it'd be nice to, you know, to see that one day if you ever had the opportunity.
From my understanding, what makes it bloodless is that there's Velcro that's used, correct? Like there's a blanket of Velcro over the bull, and then something that is kind of like a rod or a stick that has Velcro attached. And is that what makes it bloodless as opposed to a sharp object?
There's a basically like a blanket. It's like 18 by 24 inches long. It's all Velcro. And then they put these sticks that they put on the animal. And the very end of the sticks, they are completely Velcro. So basically, when the stick is put on the bull's back and it like lays over, it actually looks like it's, you know, what they do in Spain. You know what I mean? But it's really not. There is no blood. There's no nail. There's no nothing. It just looks like it's, you know, in the animal, but it's not. Just laying on top of that Velcro. It's not affecting the animal. It's not because if you've ever seen a bullfight, what the horseman uses the horses at is like a cape. He doesn't want that animal to get hit. So he uses the horse as a cape, and the horse shows by his training how well that he maneuvers in front of that animal, and he can make that bull miss him by just his maneuvering. And that's the whole thing about bullfighting. It's not for one animal to hit the other. That's not the game plan. Mm. The whole game plan is to present the horse in front of the bull, and that horse and the rider make the bull miss as a way of tiring him out for the fricados, but it's not to abuse the animal, by no means.
Clarence Oliveira is with the Turlock Pentecost Association. Clarence, thank you for joining us and for organizing this event at the Stanislaus County Fair this year. And Tony Machado is joining us from the Azores, 1,000 miles off the coast of Portuguese, and he has nearly 30 years of Portuguese bullfighting experience. Thank you both for joining us, especially Tony. you know, in on an island in the middle of the Atlantic.
Thank you.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're learning more about bloodless bullfighting in California, which made its debut at the Stanislaus County Fair. We're going to continue the conversation on this subject by getting a better understanding of Portuguese culture in the Central Valley. To provide more context and background, we've invited Dennis Borges with the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at Fresno State. Dennis, welcome to Insight.
Thanks, Vicky. Appreciate it.
First of all, let's unpack the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute and the history project that you're working on.
We are working on a history project, oral history, basically. So PBBI from Fresno State is about 3 years old. And our main mission is to collect the oral history of the Portuguese American experience in California, which is just not an experience, as both of your previous guests mentioned. It's not an experience of just someone who immigrated. It's also a second, third, fourth, and even fifth generation experience, multi-generational. So we're capturing the history of the Portuguese Americans in California through oral history. We have a speaker and a conference series. We have a publishing house, and we also have a Portuguese language program to promote the teaching of the Portuguese language and culture at Valley High Schools.
What brought Portuguese Americans to the Central Valley?
Economics, like what brings many folks from different parts of the world. We all share in that common history of coming to America and having a better opportunity. And the Azores certainly the Azores of the end of the 18th century was a very challenging place, and even the Azores of the 20th century. We live in the middle of the Atlantic, as you mentioned. Today's Azores are completely different than they were even 30 or 40 years ago. But when I came to California at the age of 10 in 1968, it was not the same place that it is today. And so we had a couple of, we had a very long running dictatorship that was brutal to the Azores. And so economics, civil liberties were the main reasons.
Would you say that an overwhelming majority of Portuguese Americans in California or the Central Valley came from the Azores?
Correct. We don't have exact numbers, Vicky. We have numbers from the U.S. Census that give the number of Californians of Portuguese background around 350,000. By our best estimates, everybody in the academic world, we're looking around 85 to 90% from the Azores.
Oh, yeah, that's significant. What has been the most fascinating part of this history project that you're working on?
Well, the most fascinating history part of it has been basically to see how the culture continues in second and third generations with different nuances. Obviously, some things are done here that they are not done in Portugal. So it's been wonderful to register these stories, to talk to folks, especially the elder generation, those 65 plus, who were already born here. It was their parents or their grandparents, in some cases their great-grandparents, that immigrated, yet they feel a strong connection. I mean, I have one gentleman that I recall with lots of emotion, 93 years old. I was lucky to capture his story before he passed last year. And he said his only regret was not having gone to his homeland, although it was his grandfather that immigrated, but he felt it was still his homeland. So the connection that folks have, even though they were born here or their parents were born here, is really amazing, and how they've been able to incorporate different elements into the different celebrations and events that involve other cultures. That to me has been a surprise, and in one way, another way, I've been studying this for just about all my life, but it's been wonderful to see how folks have been able to continue past the immigrant generation.
Dennis, thank you so much for joining us.
You.
I think a lot of us learned a lot today, myself included. Dennis Borges is the director of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at Fresno State, discussing Portuguese culture in California, specifically the Central Valley. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.